I believe in my powers.
I believe in my powers.
I believe in the powers of my teammates.
I believe in the powers of my teammates.
I trust in my powers.
I trust in my powers.
I trust in the powers of my teammates.
I trust in the powers of my teammates.
Somebody get this big walking carpet out of my way.
Look, okay, just get any blunt objects together, all right? Get cornered, bash him in the head. That seems to work out.
Now, what are we, a team? No. We're a chemical mixture that makes chaos.
Gentlemen, I'm Agent Carter. I supervise all operations for this division.
The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
And
angels of love!
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanty Show.
Roll over, Beethoven, and tell Skiffy and Fanty the news.
I'm Jen.
I'm Paul.
I'm Julia.
And I'm Alex.
And tonight we are discussing the absolutely brilliant addition to the Beethoven series, Beethoven's Christmas Adventure. Oh, so exciting.
Chosen by you, the listeners.
Thanks a lot, assholes.
The best part about this is that my friend Tori, who often watches torture cinema stuff with me, was like, what do you have to watch this time? I was like, Beethoven's Christmas. And she's like, oh God, why? And I was like, because that's what the listeners chose. And she's like, that's horrible. And I was like, well, it is torture cinema.
That's kind of the point.
It was a bridge too far for Tori, though. She did not watch it with me.
That's hilarious. All right, so let's talk about what we're drinking this evening, both alcoholic and non-alcoholic beverages alike, I'm sure. Let's start with you, Paul.
I'm having some peach Snapple iced tea because I don't have any alcohol because it's a work night, but I need something stronger than water for this.
Oh, that's lovely and amazing.
You're so Minnesota.
Oh! Hey, we could talk about Minnesota in this movie, too.
I know, it's actually apropos. All right, Julia?
I am having a very festive beverage in my lovely squid tentacle mug made by Elizabeth Paxson. I am drinking hot pineapple juice with Kraken rum.
Mmm. That sounds lovely. The cup and what it's filled with.
Yeah, it is. It is amazing. It's beautiful. I'm happy about it.
I think you're going to have to drink that as well for any time we might review one of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
Oh, if we ever do a Pirates of the Caribbean movie, clearly.
All right, Alex?
So, I only recently got home from work, which means I'm drinking the remains of my thermos tea with a healthy dose of amaretto in it, and I am drinking it from my awesome Captain America Civil War pint glass that I got from the Alamo Draft House.
I have to up my game as far as glasses. I'm just in an old Coca-Cola style glass.
That's very classic. Besides, you know, if you're in like a Coca-Cola glass that has a tangential relationship to a Christmas movie because of the Santa Coca-Cola relationship.
Yes. Okay. So I can squeeze in the plausibility there. Thank you, Alex.
It's way more Christmassy than Civil War. Let's be honest. Unless the next one will be Captain America: The War on Christmas.
No. Moving on. Jen, what are you drinking?
So I am drinking the most Christmassy possible Christmas ale from Breckenridge Brewing Company.
Which is excellent.
Yes, it is fantastic. My husband was kind enough to brave the cold weather and the snow to bring me Christmas brew. I really appreciate it because I'm going to need it for the next hour.
That sounds awesome.
It's good. I highly recommend it if you can find it in your local brew pub or wherever. Drink some Christmas ale.
I'm going to guess that's not something that we have here in Massachusetts. We do have other excellent local breweries who do other Christmassy beers, which is great.
Yes. Everybody go support your local brew pub or brewery and drink Christmas stuff, please.
It's your duty.
It is your duty as an American or even as somebody from another country, because presumably you probably have breweries. All right, let's get to this fantastic film. Julia, you get to do the synopsis.
Okay, so we watched Beethoven's Christmas Adventure. Now, I have never seen another Beethoven movie, so I don't know anything about what Beethoven's earlier adventures were, but in the beginning of this movie, we are told that Beethoven is a celebrity dog who has previously starred in a commercial that the main character's mother decides that she is going to make, because that's part of her job. I'm unclear on what her job actually entails other than making things for a company. But apparently she did a commercial and Beethoven was in it. And now she has Beethoven for some reason. And she needs her son, Mason, to look after Beethoven while she does other things for work. And Mason is, at the beginning of the movie, trying to sell hot chocolate to get money to buy video games because his mom won't buy them for him. But when he gets hold of Beethoven, he realizes he's got a celebrity dog and he can make money by selling Beethoven's picture to people, which he does for a while, until disaster! An elf flying Santa's sleigh drops Santa's magic toy bag over the town where Mason lives, which I'm not sure where it actually is supposed to be in the movie, but it's actually filmed in Winnipeg, Canada.
It's supposed to be Minnesota in the movie.
Well, it's too bad David's not here because it's actually filmed in Winnipeg. Anyway, Henry the Christmas Elf drops Santa's magical toy bag, then jumps down and ends up in a tree, and Beethoven, like, sees stuff happening and runs off, dragging the table that Mason had set up to sell hot chocolate behind him. Mason chases after Beethoven, lots of people get knocked down. Eventually, they meet up with Henry the Christmas Elf, who convinces Mason that he is a Christmas Elf by getting Beethoven to tell him something about Mason that no one else would know, and then they go on a magical adventure trying to get Santa's toy bag back from Mr. Smirch, the horrible toy store greedy owner who has stolen Santa's magic bag to use it to make toys that nobody else has and sell them for exorbitant prices to poor parents who just want to make their children happy. And meanwhile, there's lots of drama between Mason and his mom, who's not actually there for him for Christmas. And they have a rocky relationship since Mason's dad died, which is very sad. And there's a stray dog that follows Mason around that he doesn't want to adopt because he's afraid he'll end up losing the dog because, you know, people die. And then eventually in the end, though, there's peril for the mom's job. There's peril for Santa's magic bag. At one point, Henry gets thrown in jail because he's accused of stealing the magic bag, which never actually was belonging to Mr. Smirch in the first place. Everybody comes out all right in the end because Beethoven helps get the magic bag back, and Mason decides to have Beethoven's float in the magical Christmas parade be an ASPCA float, which makes his mom's boss super happy, and Henry gets to go back to the North Pole and gets Beethoven to fly the sleigh, and Santa eventually delivers Beethoven back to Winnipeg, Minnesota. Also, Mason decides he does want to keep the stray dog. Oh, but I forgot, there's one other small plot thread that it's very important that I mention. In the beginning, when Henry the elf is trying to find Santa's magic bag, he comes across a kid on a ski board. This is like a skateboard, but it has skis on the bottom of it. And he's like, dude, I could use this to go faster. And he's like, can I please borrow this? And the kid's like, no. And he's like, please, please, please let me borrow it. The kid's like, no. He's like, okay, I'm just taking it. And the kid's like, what? I said no. The Christmas elves have turned against us. We don't see this kid for the rest of the movie. Henry promises him that Santa will bring him a better ski board for Christmas. So in the after credits Easter egg scene, we see this kid with his ski board, and he's like, I got a ski board. It's so great. And then two masked men come up, pick him up off the ski board, steal it, and run away. And the very last thing we see in the movie at all is the kid being like, oh, the humanity! My ski board has been stolen again. Merry Christmas, everyone. That is how the movie ends.
I did not watch that part.
You missed the Easter egg.
Oh my, that changes everything.
It's like, Merry Christmas, everyone. This is a movie about how everything is horrible and people steal your toys. I was like, Moss came home while I was watching the very end of this movie, and I was like, wait, seriously, that's how it ends? Is that the last thing we see in this movie? And when I explained it to Moss, he was like, it's like 2016, the movie.
Oh my God.
It really is.
Yeah, I made a note about the credit cookie scene, and I wrote, not Minnesota nice.
So true.
I just don't understand what that ending was doing in a Hollywood Christmas movie at all. Like,
I don't know how Hollywood this Christmas movie actually was.
I don't understand what it's doing in any Christmas movie. It's like, Merry Christmas, everyone. Your toys will get stolen. The end.
It's a real weird tonal shift at the end.
It's a little bit bizarre. It was a little bit strange having a theft in the middle of the film in the first place, but to end it that way.
I got a theory. I don't think they actually expect anybody to actually sit through the credits to watch the ending. Because my one like, which I'm not going to give away yet, kind of points to that theory about whoever did some of the production on this movie clearly hated this movie. So I think that was a subversive, oh, we hate this movie so much, we'll put a bad credit at the end and no one will notice or care. I have evidence to support that whoever produced this movie really hated it and wanted to undercut.
Well, that actually is perfect because let's do our likes first. And Paul, you are first.
Okay, I might be stealing from somebody. Maybe you all noticed them, but I didn't notice them or didn't notice them, but I did. The store where our antagonist has his stolen merchandise store.
It's Most Wanted Toys.
Most Wanted Toys, thank you. And it used to be Most Wanted Mattresses, and used to be, before that, was probably Most Wanted something else. But clearly, I mean, his MO is he steals stuff and then he resells it. So anyway, throughout the movie, when we're in the store, there are signs up. There are signs that show that the signs are clearly subversive to the tone of the whole movie. I freeze-framed and looked at all of them. Okay, so one of the signs says, shoplifters will be beaten, kicked, and stomped. Survivors will be prosecuted.
Oh my God.
That just made this movie so much better.
If you break it, you will buy it or suffer.
I feel like that actually is in keeping with the tone of the movie. That's all in the character of Mr. Smirch.
No credit, no returns, no exchanges, no sympathy, no nothing. That's the one behind the register. Yeah, so I was amused to see these signs in Mr. Smirch's little emporium. So clearly somebody was having fun dragging down the tone of this movie by putting up these signs. So the credit cookie kind of makes sense. And they have that like white, I mean, they're like white paper and black letters, almost like a They Live sort of sign. I was highly amused to see these things. I mean, you got a freeze frame to really see some of them because you just panned by them fast, but they're clearly completely written as like, oh my God, somebody enjoyed doing this.
So headcanon, those two masked men were actually Smirch and Kenny, who never made it to Boca Raton.
I would buy that.
And then it all makes sense.
Kenny is the elf from Mr. Smirch's store.
Yes.
See, no, Kenny obviously had a heart of gold, though. I don't think he would steal that kid's ski board. He wouldn't do it. He'd feel bad.
I think he'd do it if Mr. Smirch told him to. I mean, he basically... He was the classic weak-willed henchman who is occasionally like, oh, I don't know, boss. I don't think that's a good idea. And then he gets yelled into silence.
Yeah, that's kind of my take on Kenny. Even though he did declare his freedom right there at the end. Boca Raton is a really long way if you're driving on a scooter.
Especially for Minnesota.
I have to say, like, the theme of Boca Raton and Santa's magic toy bag, all of this kind of reminded me a little bit of Ernest Saves Christmas.
Just a little bit?
Just a little bit, because we didn't have Ernest in it doing all of his ridiculous character changes.
That's true. We had Tom Arnold as Beethoven instead. All right, Julia, why don't we go with your like?
My like. Okay. So actually, this is sincere. I liked that this movie had, for one thing, Mason was actually a decent kid. He really did love his mom. And unlike in a lot of movies, which this always bugs me, something magical happens and people spend a lot of time denying it. And that's really boring. And I'd just rather get to the plot. Mason is like, what? That's insane. And then Henry is like, no, I can prove it, does. And Mason's like, checks out, you're a Santa's magic elf. Okay. I kind of actually really liked that he just was like, yeah, okay, that sounds good. And I liked that Henry was a black elf, which is cool, because I like the idea that there can be like all kinds of different people and not just white people associated with Christmas. Like, there was recently that thing where people were outraged that there was a black Santa Claus in a mall somewhere.
It was a Mall of America.
Yes, in Minnesota. So that's connects, right? It all comes back. And I'm like, you know, it's stupid that people get upset about things like that when clearly there's no reason why Santa Claus could not be a black Santa Claus. And there's no reason why we can't have black Christmas elves. So I kind of enjoyed that. There were some sincere things about this movie that I actually did enjoy. I enjoyed the fact that his mom was good at her job and that her boss appreciated that. And it was not an antagonistic boss-mom relationship. It was just that she has to really try to do good work and she cares about her work and her boss expects her to do good work and he thinks she can do it. And that, like, he's actually got a good heart and wants the animals to be rescued and is excited when the Beethoven float is ASPCA themed. And, like, so there was a lot of, like, really genuinely sincere, nice stuff in this movie, and I appreciate that, because a lot of times movies aimed at kids kind of go for the snark for some reason, and I have a 4-year-old nephew, and, like, I think he would really appreciate the kindness stuff,
Yeah, and there, I think there was a lot of it. There were some very refreshing moments, and I think in terms of the sort of that genuine acceptance, even though the mom for most of the movie is like, kid, you're crazy, you know, like, just stop bothering me, I'm busy, which makes sense. Around the holidays, particularly, people who are, especially working mothers, are kind of driven up a wall and frantic, trying to balance everything at once. But the moment she licks the magical...
the dog breath flavored candy cane.
Which is great. It was a really nice touch. Her face and her, like, oh, was, to me, one of the nicest moments in the film. For the most part, the music did not match up well with what was going on, but it had this kind of, like, nice resounding sort of, ah, and she gets this look of surprise and shock and, oh my goodness, I've been wrong this entire time. This is amazing. And then goes with it. And she's on her son's side. And of course, sometimes it does take a little bit of magic to make you believe your children, unfortunately. But that's kind of the truth of parenting.
Well, yeah, especially when they're telling you that they're like hanging out with a real live Christmas elf from the North Pole.
And that the dog is talking or whatever.
It would probably take me a moment. I don't blame her for her recalcitrance earlier on.
But I totally agree that it's great that as soon as she talks to Beethoven, she's like, well, damn, I guess I was wrong.
It was actually the build up to that was really cute too. The fact that she can actually communicate with Beethoven can communicate with her before he's actually able to talk. And so they go through this whole conversation of like, no, seriously, eat this freaking candy cane.
And she's like, okay, Beethoven, you want me to eat a candy cane? I guess I will.
I don't know about you, but I think I would be a little bit reluctant to eat a dog slobbered candy cane, but more power to her.
She went with it. Yeah.
She went with it. It was good. All right, Alex, your turn.
So for likes, basically all I've got is Robert Picardo.
Yeah, that was one of my backups.
Yeah, because seeing him brought back so many fond memories of Star Trek Voyager, and he makes the best expressions, and I just feel so sad for him that he must owe the mob money, and that is why he was in this movie.
Gotta pay the bills.
There was actually that one entire scene between Smirch and Kenny that was just expressions.
Yes! Like, that was beautiful.
It was amazing.
Robert Picardo does, he's got like a rubber face. I mean, he can just do anything.
Does it make you feel better if you consider that this might have just been a holodeck adventure?
None of it was real.
The doctor needs a hobby.
He did look like he was having a little bit of fun just being completely over the top about everything.
There are certain movies where they put an actor in and they just look miserable being over the top. I'm looking at you, Jeremy Irons. But then there's other movies like this one where they're like, you know what? I'm just going to have fun with this. Screw it. It's a bad movie, but who cares? They're paying me. Let's have fun.
Yep.
I totally agree. I think the cast was actually, it was a decent cast.
It was definitely not the worst cast we've ever seen in a torture cinema.
This was definitely not the worst torture cinema we've ever seen. Like, not by a long shot.
I mean, Mac and me.
I mean, the Star Wars holiday special.
Oh, Julia. Why would you ever bring that up again?
Because it's Christmas, and we're doing our Christmas one, and that was a previous Christmas, which I will never forget.
It has left a deep impression.
It really, really did.
When I go back to see Rogue One again tomorrow, sadly, I will probably think about the Christmas special halfway through now.
No, yeah, Michael Damian Thomas in his run-up to seeing Rogue One the other day was tweeting stills and GIFs from Star Wars Holiday Special.
Oh, that's just magical. That's magical.
He makes Lynn watch that every single year.
What?
Oh, God.
How is he still alive?
Oh my God, I love them so much now.
He watches it on purpose and makes Lynn watch it, apparently.
Oh, that's amazing and wonderful and magical.
I mean, I think that's where he gets his dark powers.
It explained a lot.
All right, so I'm going to do my like. It's pretty quick. It was two lines when Henry and Mason are having a conversation about what it's like at the North Pole. And Mason asks, you guys have the internet.
I knew you were going to say that. Oh my God. Fucking dad joke.
And Henry replies, we have the winternet. It freezes up a lot. And I just was like, oh my God, my inner punter is squeeing. This is wonderful. And then he says, what about school? Well, we would go to school, but every day's a snow day. There were some really bad puns and jokes in this movie. and I appreciated every single one of them. Because there weren't a lot, just a handful. But they were adorable and fun. And one of them was at the very end, in the whole quote-unquote epic chase scene, after Smirch has been turned into a giant Christmas ball.
Oh, God, yes.
Which was adorable, too. When he rolls down the way and goes bowling for Penguin. That was wonderful and magical, and I was very happy with that. So I'm going to go with the horrible puns and jokes that were in this film brought me that much joy.
Can I tell you my favorite line from the movie?
Oh, please.
So when Mason's mom is supposed to take him out for dinner, and they're going to have a nice holiday dinner, and then she says no, she has to work because her boss didn't like her thing. And she's like, but we'll do something really nice for Martin Luther King Day. And he's like, yeah, okay, great. I'll get out all the civil rights decorations.
So deadpan, yes.
I couldn't decide whether that one, what that was brilliant or one of the most horrible things to put in a Christmas movie. I honestly couldn't, because it was just like, okay, wait, we're making jokes about civil rights in a Christmas movie?
Well, I don't think we're making jokes about civil rights. I think we're making jokes about the fact that, like, that is not the same as Christmas. Nobody goes out to have family holiday dinner on Martin Luther King Day. That is not what that day is for. And it is a day for civil rights, which, like, a lot of times I think people just forget. People think about it as a day off of school.
Yeah.
There was actually the last joke that I really loved was, it made no sense. I can't even remember what Beethoven actually says, but the stray dog, who eventually is named after the elf, makes a that's what she said joke.
Yeah, I don't understand that joke at all.
I had to listen to it like 3 times because it made no sense.
It didn't make any sense. I mean, it was just there as like a, hey adults, this is a cue for you to realize that we just said something dirty that your kids won't understand, except that it doesn't make any sense. But you know what that's what she said jokes are, right?
Oh, that was wonderful. All right, so let's do our dislikes. We'll start back at the beginning again because I just feel like it. Paul?
Okay, so it annoyed me because I've lived here for 13 years, so I kind of know Minnesota now. So this movie is ostensibly set in the fictional small town, it's specified as a small town a couple of times, of Woodhaven, Minnesota. It is not a real place. And, well, aside from the fact there's snow on the ground all the time, you could not tell that this was set in Minnesota. As I think it was Julia pointed out, it actually was filmed in Winnipeg. You could actually see the Canadian Railway at one point. And it gets worse than that. Okay, so you're in Minnesota. So I was trying to figure out, okay, where in Minnesota could this be set? And the only cue we have of anything even remotely local, and it's not, and it doesn't even work right, is that kielbasa stand at the fair. And I'm thinking, kielbasa in Minnesota? No. This is not Chicago, which would make sense. This is not Iowa. I was thinking, it's not even southern Minnesota. I mean, if it was bratwurst, you could say, okay, it's around New Ulm somewhere. Fine. Or if they had lutefisk or something. So someone did 5 minutes of researching what people sell at fairs in Minnesota. Not hard. They could actually have hide it into Minnesota. And not to mention, everybody sounds like they're from Southern California. Just walking around snow. There is not a single Minnesota accent in this movie. Not even close. I have more of a Minnesota accent than any of these people. Yeah, they just called it Minnesota, but it's not Minnesota. And that kind of annoyed.
I think this is one of my favorite dislikes ever, Paul.
Your Minnesota is bullshit.
Apparently, some of those people were actually Canadian.
Yeah, I think the kid was, for one thing, Mason.
I just know that there was a Canadian casting credit, so there was a Canadian casting agent.
Yeah, they actually were nominated for an award in Canada. So
Canada is so hard up for movies that, that even Beethoven's Christmas Adventure gets nominated.
Oh, Canada. Oh, that's amazing. All right, who's next?
I think that's me. Okay, so, like, normally I talk about the women and things, and, I mean, this did not pass the Bechdel test, and the only woman with the speaking part was Mason's mom. But whatever, the thing I'm going to talk about that I didn't like is the damned farting sequence, which starts with burping, and then goes to farting.
Thank you!
What? But it was amazing!
It goes on forever. It is the dumbest thing ever. So, like, basically what happens is They don't know where Santa's magic bag is. They know that somebody's stolen it. And they know that the stray dog, who doesn't have a name yet, has seen it. So they take him back to Mason's garage. And Henry is trying to talk to Beethoven and the stray dog to get them to tell him what this dude looks like so he can try to find him. And they're like, we can't talk to you because we're too hungry. And the stray dog's like, I haven't eaten in a week, dude. So finally, Henry is like, all right, I got some elf chow in my bag. I got elf treats. I'll give one for each of you. They're healthy for elves. They're healthy for dogs. So he gives them each an elf treat. They gobble them up, and then they immediately start burping. And Henry's like, can you stop burping and just tell me what the dude looks like? And they're like, no, we can't do that because we're too busy burping. And they explain the process of how gas makes you burp and then fart. And then they start farting a lot. And this goes on for like 5 minutes for no reason. Until finally Henry's like, look, stop it and tell me what the dude looks like. And they immediately stop farting and tell him what the dude looks like.
I'm sorry, this is actually every dinner conversation at my household, so it made perfect sense to me.
I'm so sorry, Jen.
I imagine it would be even funnier if I were 10 years old.
Yeah, see, I imagine that that's funny for a certain segment of the population. I've just never really been into fart jokes, and this was, like, particularly poorly done fart jokes.
Tedious.
Yeah.
I think the biggest problem was that it went on for 5 minutes, and I sat there watching the clock, like, wait a minute, how long is this going on now?
How long are we going to watch these? And I mean, I basically think that what happened was they were like, this movie is not long enough. We need to make it a full hour and a half so people will think it's a full movie. What can we do? Let's put in a 5 minute sequence of dogs farting.
So what I decided was that this was actually like the dog apologists of the world somehow very poorly trying to explain why dogs fart. So all you people out there who don't actually like dogs, but you should totally go to the SPCA and adopt one. Dogs do fart, and this is why. Unfortunately, since they went with a 5 minute farting scene, I don't think anybody will ever adopt a dog again after watching this movie.
Yeah.
Mommy, I don't want a dog. They fart.
For like 5 minutes, Mom.
They're like, first they burp for 5 minutes and then they fart for 5 minutes.
I mean, farting and burping are actually, if I remember correctly, I've not watched all the Beethoven films. It is a pretty consistent joke throughout the series. They just took it a little bit too far with this one. Granted, I have heard my dog fart for that long. All right, Alex, you're up.
Okay. I'm kind of torn because there's actually two things I want to bring up, but one of them is slightly more serious, and I actually kind of want to get, like, Julia's take on it. So maybe after we go through the full round of dislikes, if we're not over on time, I could bring this thing up and just see what you guys think, because it was kind of bothering me.
I kind of wonder if it's the same thing I'm thinking about. So yeah, let's do it.
Does it have to do with Henry?
Yes!
Okay!
Okay, we've got plenty of time, so let's go with both.
Okay.
Let's go ahead, go for it.
So the serious one that I wanted to talk to Julia about is that I love Henry's casting for the reason she said when she brought up her like, but it really, really bothered me what then the casting said in the meta-narrative of the movie, where, you know, Henry is assigned to do a task that he doesn't want to do, and then the whole lesson is that he just needs to do what the to stay in his place that the white man put him in. And then also the incredibly problematic part where Robert Picardo and Kenny tie him up and talk about basically making him their slave so he can make toys forever.
Yep. So, like, he wishes he could be a toy-making slave. There's, like, so much that's, like, what is even happening here? So, like, Henry, I love that he's a black elf. That's great. But the whole meta-narrative about that is totally disturbing. He wishes that he was a toy-making elf, but he's not. He's a stable elf. And he doesn't like that. So he has like the lowest job at Santa's workshop. And then like he learns throughout the course of the movie that being a stable elf is important and he should be happy about his lot in life and know his place. And also like he gets falsely accused of stealing, which everybody of course believes that he did, and put in jail, which is a thing that we do to black men all the time and is really unfortunate. He also just everything about him, the whole like the slave joke narrative, that was just horrifying and creepy and gross.
And then the fact at the end of it, he accepts his place.
Oh yeah, no, in the end, he is super happy to go back home and be a stable elf. there's a one part of me that's like, that's actually like a reasonable narrative for elves at Christmas, is sort of like taking pride in your work type thing. But it's not put on there as if he has a choice at all. And that makes it not really okay at all.
Yeah, he doesn't have a choice because Santa knows what's best for him.
Yep, yeah, Santa the old white dude.
Okay, I'm glad I'm not the only one that was like, this is intense. No,
I found it super, super skeevy, and I almost brought that up as my dislike, but the farting dogs, man, the farting dogs.
Yeah, the farting dogs. Okay, so my less serious dislike is, since you took the farting dogs, I would like to call out the talking dogs. Because I will not have claimed to have seen all 7 Beethoven movies because I am not a masochist. However, I do remember that I actually saw the original one in the theater when I was a kid, when it came out.
Wow.
So I want to say that was like 91 or something. I was young enough to go see it, and it was a thing. And Beethoven didn't talk.
This is the only movie where he talks.
Oh, so he doesn't usually talk? I just assumed he did usually talk.
Him talking actually sort of ruins the points of all the rest of the film.
Yep.
I think, which is part of the reason that I love that scene where he communicates with the mom just through being a dog. That's typically in the Beethoven series what happened. He's very communicative as a dog, which is fine. It also was one of the reasons that these films stood out in the first place. Early 90s, there were a lot of talking animal films, which is great. They were nice for what they are. Beethoven was not one of them.
Yeah.
Very specifically. So,
and in the original movie, he's still like, you know, he gets adopted by a family and he fixes all of their problems and all that completely non-verbally. And plus the fact that, like, I don't have a personal problem with Tom Arnold as an actor. There has been a lot of stuff that I've seen him in that I thought was hilarious. But, like, in this movie, just the lines they kept putting in this dog's mouth, it was like nails on chalkboard. I was like, you make me never want to adopt a dog because apparently all dogs are snarky assholes. I mean, I found it so irritating, and they had their little creepy CGI mouths, and just, nope. Mm-mm.
The eyes! The puppy dog eyes!
When they did the puppy dog eyes!
Ah, that was terrifying and adorable at the same time!
I actually appreciated that. I will say that I have watched a lot of talking animal movies, so I enjoy to watch movies with animals in them. And that is probably one of the reasons why I didn't hate this as much as I often hate torture cinema movies, because even if the animals had terrible voices and whatever, but they're real dogs and dogs are adorable. I have developed opinions about what talking animals in movies should and shouldn't sound like, which is something that I didn't really expect. But like a while ago, many years ago, I did a compare and contrast review of a talking cat, which is spelled with exclamation point, question mark, exclamation point, and vampire dog. And what I learned when watching those, and this is when I first realized this, is that a talking cat has Eric Roberts, who is Julia Roberts' brother, voicing the cat, and he has a terrible voice for a talking cat. Like, no cat should ever talk like that. Whereas I think it's Norm MacDonald who voices the dog in Vampire Dog. And he sounds like a dog. He's a good dog voice.
Norm MacDonald is actually one of the best dog voices ever.
This is what I learned, that like there are people who should voice dogs and cats and people who should not. And I will say that, I mean, Tom Arnold is great, but no, he should not be a talking dog. And the other dog also had a terrible voice.
Yeah, I hated that dog's voice.
It was like whiny, and it definitely did not make you want to adopt a dog. And considering this was actually an ASPCA commercial for an hour and a half, I feel like they made some bad decisions.
but the dogs were adorable. And I will say Billy Joel and young Joey Lawrence have great dog and cat voices in Oliver and Company.
You know, I'm looking at like the person who was the voice for the stray dog, and just like, who the hell is this?
As somebody who should never voice a dog.
Or anything, really. I mean, I'm just saying. So, particularly, totally off subject. Yay! So I've been playing Dragon Age Inquisition, and I found I can't talk to Sarah because I hate her voice so much. I'm sorry, I just can't. I love everybody else. It's amazing. It's a great game. But I can't talk to Sarah. so I avoid her completely. I kind of felt the same way about this stray, which was a bummer because he was adorable when he wasn't talking. All right, so my dislike, I use this a lot, unfortunately. I feel like our fans just don't like torturing us enough with film. This movie was boring. One of the criticisms that I read was that their kid, who was like 8 years old, had problem paying attention to the film because there was nothing to keep your attention. There were various plot lines going on, but in general, it didn't have any of the magic that I would normally associate with a Christmas film. There were a couple moments where I was like, oh, that's cool and sweet and yay. It was very sincere, but overall, it didn't catch me in the slightest. And that's coming from, for me, I love the actors that played Kenny and Smirch. Having Booger in there was just adorable, and I was very happy. I actually love Kim Rhodes. I think she's fantastic in The Sweet Life of Zack and Cody. Yes, I am a mother of children who watch a lot of Disney shows, and it was a great part. I liked the guy who played the boss. I liked everybody in this film, and somehow, all put together, they were boring, which I think says a lot about a Christmas film. Christmas films are generally, they are things, I love Christmas so much. So when a film is not able to even inspire a moment of, oh, I want to give to people, I'm kind of disappointed. I did have one moment of, oh, I want to adopt another dog. And then I remembered that they fart for 5 minutes.
Exactly.
And I was kind of done with that. So yeah, once again, just kind of a boring torture cinema. I couldn't feel either good about it or bad about it. And I will never, ever, ever watch it again.
Listeners, give us some torture cinema that we can actively and vilely hate. You've heard me rant about some of those. Give me more of those where I can really let loose about how bad it is.
So I actually suggested that we put Love Actually into the poll. just because I don't necessarily hate the movie. There are a lot of things that I hate about the movie, though. But it's such a divisive film, I think. There is like an entire camp of people who are like, this is the worst Christmas movie ever. And an entire camp of people who are like, this is the best movie ever. And I kind of wanted to tackle that. But yeah, give us things to argue about. Because this one...
Yeah, we just kind of uniformly agree that it's boring and terrible. Too much farting.
But it is sincere and has cute dogs. You gotta give it that.
And a really awful slave narrative.
Yeah, the really awful slave narrative is a really awful slave narrative.
Yeah, that was, I think, the worst thing about this film.
It was horrible.
Yeah, I was offended on everybody's behalf for that one. All right, so let's go with our grade. Paul?
I don't know how to grade a boring, meh, torture cinema. I wasn't tortured. It was just there, kind of like a lump of lutefisk that sits on your plate and quivers at you.
Oh, my God.
I had to use a Minnesota reference, you know.
The most Minnesota thing about this movie now.
But lutefisk would have been better because lutefisk is terrible tasting. And this movie isn't as terrible as lutefisk. I know. So I'm just going to let this movie escape with a D because I got nothing better to give or worse to give it because it's not, it's just there. It's like, come on. I spent an hour and a half of my life to watch this.
That you'll never, ever, ever get back.
I know. It has eaten some of the clock of my life and that's about it. A D. D.
All right. Sounds good. Julia?
So I would give this movie a C because I think of the torture cinema movies that we had to watch, especially the Christmas ones. It's probably the one that I would not care as much if I had to watch again. Except for that horrible slave narrative. I cannot, that is just so awful that I have to knock it down to a D for that. And we didn't even talk about the weird, gay-coded elf who had a Christmas, like, S&M collar. And was like just there to be like a snarky gay dude, but not in a really good way, just kind of in a stereotypical way for no reason. And so like there were things like that that I was just like, why is this happening? What is happening right now and why? And the slave narrative thing that just, yeah. So because of those things, I got to knock it down to a D. Otherwise, I'd probably give it a C because even though it was, as you say, boring, it was just kind of there. I was wrapping presents while I was watching it. And like, honestly, it wasn't the worst thing I've ever watched while wrapping presents.
There's a story there.
All right, Alex.
I mostly just thought it was boring, so I too would give it a C, except for the creepy meta-narrative knocks it down to a C-, and then that fucking dog farting scene takes it down to a D. Fuck you.
It was so terrible.
I think I have to concur, which I think might be one of the first times that everybody has actually agreed on a grade in torture cinema.
Because Sean's not here.
It was an utterly boring film that became completely revolting in the slave narrative. And yeah, let's go with a D. I think that's a completely fair assessment of this film.
The Skiffy and Fanti show has spoken. This movie is a D.
Wow.
Unanimously, we give this movie a D. This is like, this is a Christmas miracle, you guys.
Oh my god. Thank you, Julia. Yes, Christmas miracle. So, on that note, if you would like to drop us a line telling us how you feel about Beethoven's Christmas Adventure or about us in general, please be nice. You can do so through email at skiffyandfanti@gmail.com. On Twitter, at Skiffy and Fanti, on our Facebook page, The Skiffy and Fanti Show, somewhere on Google+, or you could throw a message in a bottle into the ocean and hope that someone takes it to us because we're all landlocked. We would also appreciate your support at patreon.com/skiffyandfanti. We've got some cool stuff over there. So, yeah, I guess that's everything.
Awkward ending? You're welcome, citizen.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Happy holidays.
Our intro and outro music comes from Nocturnia by Psychedelic Pedestrian. You can find out more about them on freemusicarchive.org, including the full version of the song. We obviously made some edits to the song, including sound effects and, of course, shortening the length. You can also support us by going to patreon.com/skiffyandfanti. If you'd like to send us a suggestion, you can do so at skiffyandfanti@gmail.com. You can also go to our website, skiffyandfanti.com, and check out the little suggested topic form at the top there. You can also just send us emails. You can also find us on Twitter at skiffyandfanti or on Facebook at The Skiffy and Fanti Show. Just search for us on there. Thanks for listening, and we hope to see you next time.